Hey everyone, this is Chris and you're listening to the Live Fix Podcast, the podcast that explores the concert fan experience. We believe live music is life-altering. Join us as we share stories and connect with concert fans to discover how live music forever rocks our world before, during, and after the show. Thanks for listening and enjoy the episode. Hey there, my fellow live music fans. Man, we love talking to you about why we love live music. And, you know, we got another excellent concert fan conversation for you. We had a chance to connect back with our friend Eric at the Nihilist Kolke. If you're not familiar with Eric, he's got a great history and a great influence on the Chicago punk music scene, and actually punk music scene beyond Chicago. So we encourage you to go back and check out episode 23, where we really dove into his history and influence and talked about, you know, documentaries that were made about that and just, you know, his reflections on that time period. But what we were doing over this last couple of years is I was thinking about him. He loves live music so much and just depends on, you know, everything that the live music experience brings to fans. He really is a passionate fan. So I was wondering, you know, how's he doing? You know, how's he coping? How's he dealing with that live music withdrawal? So we had a chance to talk with him about that, and also, you know, get into you know, ways that fans are coping, and, you know, and even, you know, the impact of live music in a post-COVID world. Like, how does that impact fans and bands? And we also talked about this moment when he first went to a Frank Zappa show and got his very first autograph. So really, really cool story about that. And also it made me think about, you know, the connection between live music and, you know, fan and artist memorabilia. Some of the greatest things I've thought about is just in, you know, in that context of the things that we treasure about our favorite bands, and how does live music play into that, and how do those moments flow into, you know, the concert experience, you know, those the signed autographs, the posters, t-shirts, all those kinds of things got me thinking about that, just hearing how much Eric is passionate about the live music memorabilia, or just memorabilia in general, and kind of how that fuels the excitement, anticipation before a show. We also get into this really cool story about Iggy and the Stooges and the infamous Raw Power jacket story. So encourage you to listen closely on that one. We also talk about Lady Gaga, the Ramones, the Chairlifts, and a bunch of other great bands. So that's it. We encourage you to you know, buckle up, get ready for another wild ride with Eric Kolke. We hope you enjoy it. Here's the episode. All right, Eric Nihilist Kolke, so great to have you on the show, man. Thanks for being here. Glad to have you back.
Great to be back.
We needed more from you.
I thought you were supposed to always leave him wanting less. I guess we're going to accomplish that now.
No, it's awesome, man, having you back on the show. I was listening to our first show, and I was like, oh, I couldn't wait to do this episode and have you back and hear what you've been up to. And, you know, the world is a lot different since we last talked, and you know, COVID and all that kind of stuff.
We have a lot more signs all definitely, the time. Lots of signs. Yes. I feel like.
Yeah, a lot of.
Every store has like 10 more signs before you walk in.
Yes, lots of signs. You know, and just all the stuff that obviously has impacted concerts. You know, I'm sure you have lots of great stories to tell about that. So we just want to have you back on to talk about that. And yeah. So how have you been? How are things? What shows have you been to lately?
They've been good. Yeah. I mean, COVID was tough. I mean, COVID was definitely tough because, you know, nobody was touring. The venue, and I didn't know if any of the venues were going to even survive. I'm like, nobody knew how long this was going to go on. And, you know, it was a big question mark. And of course, you know, I wasn't getting my live music fix. So it wasn't easy.
You're going through some withdrawals, huh?
Very definitely. Very definitely. I mean, the last show, I think it was right before Best Coast was at, I think, Lincoln Hall. That was the last live show that I saw. And people still had, like, masks on, and or some people had masks on and some didn't. And this was before they just stopped and told everyone, you know, just told everyone to stop touring, you know, stay inside, don't go anywhere. And I think Best Coast actually, that was like one of their last dates of that tour, and then they canceled the rest of the tour because everybody was, you know, freaking out and, oh, you know, you gotta, COVID's gonna kill everyone, you gotta stay home, you gotta wear a mask, you gotta get, you know, stay 6 feet apart. And then there were just no shows for a long, long time. There was just nothing. And, it, you know, it was tough. I have to say it was tough. I also was very upset, although Habibi, who I love, which is a band from, you may have heard of them, but they're a band from New York, and they have the lead singer, Ahil, is Iranian. She's Iranian-American. So she, you know, it's a kind of a mix of Middle Eastern garage pop. You know, they have their own sound. Definitely have their own sound. Nobody else sounds like a BB. And they were supposed to play The Hideout, and I was very excited. And I was really looking forward to it. And then that got canceled, and it didn't happen. Then, you know, I had to wait. But not so long ago, they did come to The Hideout. They did the show. The show was great. They're just a great band. It was really nice, you know, seeing them at The Hideout. You know, just, you know, I'm can't wait for them to come back. And, you know, it looks like live music is back. And, you know, the fests are back too, Riot Fest and et cetera.
And do you feel like this fans are the same? Or do you feel like people kind of are not as friendly? Or what did you feel like when you're in the environment of the club?
It was great. I mean, at least at The Hideout, it was great. You know, at the Habibi show, everybody was very enthusiastic, and it was really fun. And you know, the thing is, though, it's a small club, which is great for me because I love the band, and you know, I love being up front, and I love bothering the band members and getting pictures and autographs. And the place is small enough where, you know, there's not a lot of places for them to hide. So I was able to get the autographs and the pictures, and I also bought like a ton of merch. You know, whenever they, if they come in, if I don't have it, I buy it. So they had some new stuff. I bought, you know, just a ton of stuff. And then I had some friends with me, and I bought them stuff too. So it's hard because, you know, it's hard to say because it's a very small, it's a small club. It's a, you know, they, Habibi knows how to get everybody kind of energized and, you know, excited. And, you know, I haven't really been to a bigger venue COVID, so I guess I will find out what that is like, if it's the same or if it's not. And, you know, I hope it's good. You know, I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that there's just a lot of pent up demand. People, you know, want to go out and hear live music again and, you know, go nuts and be enthusiastic and, you know, live their lives and not be cowering and worrying and, you know, I got to, all that kind of stuff. You know, I'll know soon enough. I mean, if, you know, a lot of the shows I go to, there's mosh pits and stage diving. And, you know, if people are afraid to do that, then, yeah, it'll be, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see. So, what about you? Have you been to any shows?
We have a little bit. Yeah, I was curious too, Eric, on knowing that you're such a major live music fan, to say the least. I don't know if there's a word to describe your level of fandom.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about you during COVID in context of you know, concerts and shows, right? And like I was wondering, like how is Eric Kolke dealing with not being able to go to live music? Like, what is he doing?
Is he streaming? I'm thinking you're sitting there.
Is he
streaming?
Is like... is he watching, listening to, you know, live records, you know, of live shows in the past? Like, what did you do? How did you, how did you cope with that? Because we had our ways to cope, and we can
Yeah.
share those. But I was curious, like, how did someone like yourself, who just loves live music and is like it's part of your DNA, and like you
Yeah.
love it, like how did you cope, and what did you do?
There was a lot of that. I mean, I have a pretty big TV screen, and I just watched a lot of, like I said, a lot of live shows. I have so many records, that I was able to listen to stuff that either I feel like I, haven't listened to enough, or I haven't listened to in a long time. But, I was still jonesing. I'm like, it's not the same. Really nice to go out, and just it's good for me. To let out a lot of steam, and a lot of frustration and that kind of thing. So it's a healthy thing for me. Everybody's got their therapy. That's my therapy. Just good for me to go out to live shows and, and blow off steam and go nuts and have fun. And, I usually know a lot of the people there because a lot of the same people show up. And you always see somebody I know and catch up and it's just great. And if it's I don't go unless it's a band I want to see. So I'm already very excited to see the band. And me, I'm terrible. I mean, I'm going to hang out with the band. I'm probably going to be backstage. I'm going to take a lot of pictures. I'm going to get a lot of autographs. If there's anything that I don't have, I'm gonna go buy it. If there's something that they new shirts and usually, when bands tour, they try to do that. They try to have something new to bring with them, even if it's just a new, tour shirt or something. So, it's just great for me. I'm a fanboy. What can I say? There's nothing I can do. I've
You
told
don't know
people,
what
I'm
you
like,
got till it's gone, right? You don't know what you got till it's gone.
I see, the bands are starting to tour again. I mean, they've missed it too. It's very difficult for bands, that's what they do. I mean, they basically make money now by touring. Things are very different than they were when I was doing shows. I mean, the things have changed quite a bit. When I was doing shows, like early, well, not early, but like 77, around that. The record companies were making so much money selling records that they paid for the whole tour. The tour was like just an advertisement. So, I mean, there wasn't even a question. You didn't have to worry about, what's the tour going to cost? Because nobody cared. It's like, we don't care. It's just a big, the live shows are just an advertisement to sell the records. That's how many records they were selling. Now that, touring is expensive. It's really expensive. And the record companies, they didn't care. I mean, to them, it was like, a drop in the bucket. It's like, yeah, you have a new record, you're going to go on tour, and, we're paying for the whole thing. And, well, I mean, I sort of caught the tail end of that. That didn't last, It didn't last that long, I mean, that was kind of dwindling down, but I was there when that was still happening, and that was kind of the norm. And then everyone's like, "Oh, now we got to pay for the tour." And if you're with a booking agency or management and et cetera, you had the record deal, you had all that stuff. It was paid for, but you eventually were gonna you were going to pay it back. The band is gonna pay it back. I mean, it just gets on their bill. Some bands know that, and some bands don't. But eventually, they discover that no, you're paying. It's on your bill. You owe. Whereas before, the record company paid, and you didn't hear anything about it. So that changed quite dramatically. And then if you didn't have a deal, and I've been with bands that, that had great deals and okay deals, and they had no deals, and the people had no deals. I mean, you're paying for the whole thing, unless go out there and get some people to give you some money to advertise, their service or their product or whatever. And some people that are kind of the hustlers that are yeah we and some bands are willing to do that, which I think is a smart thing. Some bands are like, I would never do that. I will not, I would not have somebody, you know, I wouldn't take somebody's money and then advertise their service or their restaurant or their, I mean, usually if you're a band, you can find at least something. You agree? If it's like a hot dog stand or something, like, really? This, aren't you happy to, aren't you okay, like, advertising devil dogs or, you know, what have you? I mean, you know, so there are ways to work it, but it's things have changed quite a bit. I mean, it's not, you know, it wasn't the way that it was when I started. And, you know, for most of that time, it changed. I mean, and then I would have to pay for the tours, most of them. You know, nobody else was paying for them. I might have, you know, some advertisers or something, but, you know, it was not cheap, and it would have to be covered. Then, you know, now recently you have the 360 deal where, you know, the people that are managing whatever, they get like a cut of everything. They get a cut of the merchandising, they get a cut of the record sales, you know, and they get a cut of, you name it, of the live shows, and, you know, they get a piece of everything.
And then they have all the social media that they're bringing in money probably from too, you know, Twitter and YouTube. And I mean, there's got to be some money that's coming, you know, some stream of money that's coming from that too.
Yeah, there is. And it depends on, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's like amazing or anything, but, you know, there can be, but, and it depends on, it's, you know, the music people usually look at how many subscribers you have. Which I don't really understand, but they look at subscribers, not necessarily how many people watch your videos or interact with you or leave messages, but just the number of subscribers. Mm-hmm. Which is why, you know, a lot of bands, they just like, you know, they send out random things going, hey, like my band. You know, you never heard of them in your life. Mm-hmm. And usually I do. But, I mean, they're trying to get their numbers up. They know the game. So they're like, well, you know, a lot of bands are like, we got to get our numbers up. Let's just send out a bunch of things and, you know, and try to get our numbers up and maybe somebody will notice us. And, you know, you do that. And then, you know, you try to get, you know, bands try to get their music video or their whatever it is on any of the music sites, anybody who will show it, anyone who will, you know, put it on their site. And, you know, and some people are real hustlers and, you know, and some are not. And then,
some
of course,
people are really good online, and then when you see them in live, you're like, what did I just see? They're just not as good in person.
I know. Yeah. I mean, somebody was like, hey, we're going to make you really exciting in this video. Or, you know, we're going to – and, yeah, when you see me, you're like, oh. Which is the thing is, though, usually if someone – they're going to – if a booking agent is going to sign somebody, they see you live. They want to see you live. They want to see if your live show is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not just standing there, you know, because your music is so great, you know, that it just mesmerizes anyone who hears it. And you don't have to move at all or, you know, have. So, you know, some people have a really great live show. And, you know, some people are like, wow, they're not moving. It's almost like watching a movie.
We've had our fair share of shows like that. I think I've felt that. That same thing going to, you know, there's been some bands I've seen at like Pitchfork Festival,
yeah,
that are great in the basement, you know, great, beautiful album. But on stage, yeah, underneath the hot sun in the middle of the summer, you know, not necessarily the best show. Right. And, you know, that can definitely change. And I was wondering, you know, related to what you were saying about, you know, then and now. How do you think that, you know, post COVID, that the concert industry has changed? Like, is there anything that you think fans are going to do differently? Bands are going to do differently. Event promoters are going to do differently. Like it's COVID has certainly changed like all aspects of our lives. And I was really curious, you know, with your background, you know, in, you know, event promotion as a fan, you know, just the experiences that you've had throughout your life. And then, you know, we're in this really kind of, I think, new territory of post COVID, you know, with concerts. Like, how do you think it's changed for fans, for bands, and for event promoters?
Should I buy stock in virtual reality? That's really what we're asking.
The only thing that I think is possible, but it's still a big question mark, and it depends on the band. I think there's some bands that can do, you know, that they would be able to do a live show somewhere, wherever that may be, and also be able to have people pay to watch them from their homes. Not the same thing as being there, and not every band can do that. Only some bands can do that and actually have it work.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the band and, you know, the venue, etc., it could, I mean, that could be a very big deal, you know. And it's the same thing. You can see a lot of the record companies now are very good at putting out these big box sets of albums and CDs. They know the fans. They know who's going to buy. You know they're going to sell out. And they're usually fairly expensive. I mean, they're usually like, you know, $200 or more than $200. And they sell out. So they know their audience. They know exactly how many to make, or they have a pretty good idea of how many they're going to sell. They know how much it's, you know, it's going to cost. And they know, you know, even at this price, these you know, this band has hardcore fans, and they'll pay. They'll pay the price because they have to have it. And it wouldn't be good enough just to get it in some other, like a digital format. Hardcore fans, I mean, they want the physical thing. The real fanatics, they want the real thing. They want the physical thing. I think I mentioned my, I don't know, I'm debating whether I was going to tell my Zappa story or not. I guess it's okay. But you don't care, right?
Tell it.
Well, not, yeah.
Okay.
I'm intrigued. Yeah, tell us this episode story.
Okay, so I've always been and I still am a massive Frank Zappa fan, crazed fan. since I was a teenager, I absolutely had to have, and I still do, every Frank Zappa thing on earth. And if there's like a deluxe limited edition quad to quirk megapixel version, I have to have it. So I have to have every format. Whatever it is, I have to have it. So, you know, Zappa really, you know, kind of had, he's an unusual musician because, you know, he had his own record label for, you know, he still does, I mean, for a long, long time. You know, and it was Zappa Records. He left Warner Brothers and he was, had his own record company, put out his own stuff, and he had his own cottage industry that was run out of his home.
Laurel Canyon, and, I believe.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just unlike other bands or musicians. I mean, a lot of them did not get involved in the business side, but Frank Zappa always did. He wanted control over everything, and he wanted to make sure if somebody was going to get the money, it was going to be him. You know, he's like, yeah, I got really tired of, you know, records falling off trucks and ending up at friendly record stores. And, you know, there's a lot of funky stuff that goes on. And so they actually, you know, he says, yeah, you know, he made a lot of money just doing it himself and having this cottage thing. And I bought everything from Barfco. It was Barfco Swill. And I would buy everything from Barfco Swill. And if you had a question, you know, you could call him. 818 Pumpkin. You could call the people there, and you know, at the store, and somebody would pick up and ask about your order. Hey, where's all my stuff? And so then they moved it to this other company called Hi-Fi Entertainment, who they've had since like the 90s. And those guys are great. I mean, when you're somebody like me who, you know, they have like two or three releases a year. And I buy all of it. And I pre-order everything immediately. So, you know, I was able to call the people there. They get to know me. They've gotten to know me. And, you know, I need some hand-holding and a little high maintenance sometimes. I'm like, when's it going to go out, you know? But they know I'm going to buy everything. and every time. So they recently, I don't know if you saw, but the Zappa catalog was sold to Universal Music. They have like a whole new store. And I ordered, this is the first thing that they've handled. I ordered this new Zappa / Erie 6 CD. It was the limited edition set, box set, with a poster. And I pre-ordered it in April, and I had to wait. Then it was supposed to come out like June 1st. It was supposed to be delivered, but it got pushed back to like June 17th. And they were using, and I didn't even know they had a new store until I had already paid for it. And it's like $200. And I didn't even know they were using, there was a new store that they weren't with Hi-Fi Entertainment anymore. I didn't realize until after I'd bought it. And they're using this weird hybrid where it was UPS and USPS, and they was kind of tag-teaming the package. So UPS would bring it to some sorting facility, and then USPS, like 4 days later, would pick it up, and they'd bring it somewhere, and then it would sit there for a few days, and then UPS was back in the picture, and then USPS would get it from them. And so it finally, I have cameras in my house outside, and I'm watching to see, you know, when the delivery person is going to show up. Because I'm at work, but I have neighbors. If I'm going to be at work, I have neighbors, and I'm like, hey, you bring in my package when it shows up. And I'm good because I bring in their packages all the time. And because, you know, if you don't, it's going to get stolen.
And hopefully they're not Zappa fans.
Yeah, exactly. Well, usually, I mean, I'm watching the people deliver it. I'm like, okay, I call my neighbors. Can you go get it? Go get it. Bring it in. You know, and they'll go get it and bring it in. And as long as it's inside, it's fine. So, anyway, it finally got delivered. And it was an empty, flat, cardboard box. Flat.
Oh, wow.
Nothing in it. Huh. On the front, in marker, was written, received without contents. And it was like initials, looked like an ampersand. And then the date, 6/25. And on the back is that USPS sticker. It's like, you know, we care in big letters. And, you know, we're sorry that we damaged your mail, but blah, 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 blah. And sorry for this inconvenience. I'm like, you didn't damage anything. It got stolen. It's gone. And, you know, it had cellophane over the whole thing. You know, so somebody like put cellophane over an empty cardboard box with the sticker on this still on the front with the tracking number and the tracking bar and all that stuff. And I got emails saying, your bag has been delivered. I'm like, you know, obviously it was stolen while one of these people, you know, had it under their care. And they actually thought it was okay to deliver to my home a flat, empty cardboard box with cellophane around it, which, I mean, there's something very comical about it, but there's also, like, how could it go through? It went through, like, I don't know how many checkpoints. And, you know, and they scan it. I think there are pictures of it, too. I think when they scan packages, they actually have pictures of the packages. So, you know, there at checkpoints, there's a thing where there's a big box set. You know, it's like a book. It's like a book with, you know, three CDs on one side and three on the back and the poster.
If it's not in there, yeah.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it gets put through and it's just a flattened pancake cardboard box. I mean, it was like a pancake. And it was just completely flat with cellophane around it. And, I mean, I'm like, really? Nobody at any point said, there's nothing here. It's something happened where it's empty. I mean, nobody takes ownership. And they actually deliver it to your place. It just bothers me because it's like, well, somebody I think should take, and I'm just venting. Take ownership.
Did you end up getting the music or the box set?
Well, you know, I was checking when while I was waiting for that package to show up, and I could see on the Zappa website that they were sold out. But I wasn't worried because I'm like, well, I pre-ordered it when they first announced it, and it's on the way. So when it didn't show up, I'm like, uh-oh, this could be trouble because they're sold out. and, you know, maybe they have a copy here or there or something. So I actually did talk to some of the people at Zappa Records. Actually, I went into full, you know, insanity mode. So I have my friend at Vintage Vinyl in Evanston. I'm calling him, going, hey, if you see a copy, if you get a, you know, let me know. I'll buy it. I'll pay anything. I don't care how much it costs. I must have it. You know, I'm price insensitive. It doesn't matter. But I want that limited edition Quadraquark 6-CD set with the poster. It has to have the poster. You know, because they do have it available, but it's without the poster.
Now, is that, poster from is that a like a reprint of like a concert poster, or is that like, how does that?
No, it's new. It was made for this particular product.
Ah, okay. So
and it's full of I'm trying to think of kind of the continuity. I can't think of it, but there's a thing, you know, with Zappa, with all his stuff, there's always like continual continuity. There's always references to other works that he's done, and there's a lot of references in the poster. Same thing, you know, that they conceptual continuity. That's what it is. And so I want, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, usually I don't talk to anybody about this because they think I'm nuts. But the only time that you ever, like, can really talk about these things, you know, are with other music people. You know, you're having a couple of beers
or
whatever.
The only ones that understand. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Everybody else thinks you're crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking of, you know, what you had filled out. You know, we asked you in prep for the show what, you know, what band you could go back to in the past if you could, right? And, you know, whether they were dead or alive. It's a question we love to ask fans. You know, there's lots of bands that we love that are no longer touring or no longer alive that we're like, man, I would love to go back. And you said Mothers of Invention. And
right. Do want to say that I have ordered there are other places where I've paid more to get that limited edition, and I'm waiting now for it to arrive.
So you may.
So
I've
like.
You got a? Do you have like a video tracker on that thing? Like, are you? You know, do you have special people walking alongside that package?
I would do that if I could do that. I would do it. But I, you know, I'm like, I will get it. I will get it. Now. I'm paying like maybe triple what I originally paid, but I will get it. It will be
Did they give you the hookup at all or anything like that? Or
I talked to people at Zappa Records. They were very nice about it. I mean, they're like, hey, it's sold out. We don't have any more, but we'll send you, you know, the package, you know, the thing without the poster. And they're going to send me, I guess, a link. They haven't done it yet, though. I haven't got it yet, but I believe that they will do that. And, you know, I have more than one copy of a lot of Zappa stuff.
How many times have you seen Zappa live?
Yeah.
I've seen Zappa live maybe 10 times, something like that. Whenever he came to Chicago, I would see him. And I have the T-shirts to prove it. So, you know, he's at the Uptown a bunch of times, and he was at the Park West, which was pretty cool. That was unusual. That was a great show. And,
so what is it about Zappa that you know, makes him stand apart? I mean, I have heard other fans really put him on a pedestal and just he sets himself apart. I mean, I think he's you know, a top 10 list for sure. What is it about for you? Like his show? Like what did he do, or what was standout moments for you in those 10 shows?
You have to, first of all, I mean, you have to be somebody who likes his music, and he plays a lot of different types of music. So it isn't like a usual band where you can like listen to a couple of records and you're like, okay, I know what to expect. Now I know what I'm going to get from a Led Zeppelin record. I have a pretty good idea of what that's going to sound like. You know, Frank Zappa was doing, I mean, he would do jazz and he would do experimental, and it could be show tunes. It could be opera. It could be country. It was still him, you know, it was still kind of this weird stuff that he does and that weird mix. And then you'd have very complicated stuff to play and really, really great musicians to play it who are rehearsed to the nth degree. I think it's to get that kind of show where you have really, really complicated, sophisticated, difficult music to play by people who are absolutely, the greatest musicians ever at the height of their game, who have been rehearsed to the nth degree, is just, the greatest thing ever. And so if you're a Zappa fan, you love it. And all the shows were always different too. They were very different. You would get different guitar solos from Zappa. There would be different songs. Every show was different, which is why, besides the unbelievable output, I mean, you could spend your whole life listening to Frank Zappa and you'd be dead before you could hear it all. It's just too much. It's too much material. You have all of these bootlegs that, sell insanely. And the Zappa fans buy all of it. And because they're all different. The shows are all different. And, that stuff is... I have a, if it has Zappa's name on it, I have it. And then,
is there
of course,
something
you
don't have that you're like, it's on your wish list?
Yeah, or your favorite... Do you have a favorite Zappa show memorabilia?
Oh, do I have a favorite? Well, I got his autograph. So that is a very big deal. I have it
at the show?
At one of the shows, yeah.
Oh.
At one of the shows, I got his autograph.
How'd you do that?
I was very young. It was... How old was I? I was in high school. I went to go see him. And I think it was at the Uptown, pretty sure. And I brought a heavy piece of paper with me and a pen. And I was dead, I was going to get his autograph somehow. And when he was on stage, I went up there to the front of the stage, my pen and paper. And I had to wait for him to finish playing guitar, which is fine because I love his guitar playing. And his security guy, was kind of inching towards me, and I'd move back. But Frank was like, oh, it's okay. Well, I'm happy to give this guy an autograph. So he gave me his autograph. As soon as I got it, I got out of the way, went back to my seat. And then I framed it, and I still have it. And I'll always have it. And, it was just a very big deal that I got his autograph. And this is before I was Eric Nihilus. I didn't know anything about how you, going backstage and how you meet band members and any of that kind of stuff, So it was a very, very big deal. I was, I'm like, I have to get his autograph. I have to do it. And, there are just, there are a few standouts. So that's kind of the big autograph for me. The other one is Iggy Pop. I love Iggy Pop, but I did shows with Iggy Pop. But I have his autograph, which is also a very big deal for me. And I also have Tom Waits' autograph. I said those are kind of the big.
Yeah, so that Zappa moment, was that the first time that you had approached an artist at a show for an autograph, or had you experience? So that was the very first time that you did that. So you were just kind of feeling that out as you went. Like, did you have any
butterflies?
Or examples, right? How do I do this? Do I go to the stage or do I go backstage? Because there's a lot of funny moments in movies, where they're waiting in line after the show or, they're inching up. Like, how did you know what to do? Or were you just kind of figuring that out? Or what was that like for you?
I didn't, when that happened, I was very young. I mean, that was like, I think it was like a freshman in high school. maybe a sophomore, but it was like early high school. So, you know, I'm like, well, I can get his autograph because I see him on stage. I know I can go up there. The only problem I have is if somebody tries to stop me getting this autograph, and they might. But, you know, I'm going to do my best to get this autograph. And I'm like, I want to see him sign it. No, I don't want to give it to someone who's going to give it to him and then give it back to me or anything like that. I want to see it with my own eyes. No, not that I would even know who to ask to do that, but I was like, I want to see with my own eyes. I want to see that he signed it in front of me. And he was, you know, he told the security guy to kind of back off, and that as soon as he was done playing guitar, you know, he'd quickly give me this autograph. And I was good, you know. I gave it to him. He signed it. I went back to my seat. Now, I just did it as long as, you know, kind of thanked him, you know, from where I was and went back to my seat. So I'm like, I'm not here to cause any trouble. I just want this autograph really, really badly. And I was very excited that I got it. And I'm still excited that I have it. And, you know, I framed it almost immediately. I've had it, you know, since that day. I've taken really good care of it. Mm. Same thing, you know, the Iggy Pop autograph. And the Tom Waits autograph. And I have a lot of, I have a lot of autographs. And I have a lot of signed records. Some of the stuff, I mean, you know, original Ramones records with the original band signatures on them and stuff. I did a lot of shows with the Ramones. You know, it's different when you finally are doing it. Back then, you know, I didn't know anything about going backstage or how you would do that, or, you know, that, you know, the idea was that I would ever even be allowed to do that, that anybody would, you know, it didn't even enter my mind. I'm like, that's not going to happen. The only way that I'm ever going to get this autograph from Frank Zappa is if I go up to the stage and I kind of, you know, am focused on this and, you know, not going to do my best not to take no for an answer. You know, and I got it. I'm really happy about it. Yeah, I fill that thing out. I would have loved to have seen the original Mothers of Invention. So I don't know. Maybe I always wondered, like, when you die, if you go to heaven, then can you see? If it really is heaven, then I assume you can see all the bands that you were not able to see because you were, you know.
not here.
You were, that's a great you were thought, born man. Yet.
Great yeah. thought.
That's like Bessie yeah. Smith. I would love to see her play. And yeah. she's way, yeah. way before my time. So
yeah. Yeah. Jimi Hendrix. And it's, you know, not even, just to see him live, you know, that would
yeah.
would be one, you know.
It's not even necessarily that I wasn't born yet, but I was just too young. Yeah. I was in the wrong mm-hmm. place. I mean mm-hmm. I was born in 1960. So, you know, I'm 1967, 1968, and you know, 7, 8, 9, you know.
And maybe you would have been too young to really appreciate, right? Like, your brain maybe not fully was there to appreciate how amazing some of these bands that you got to see later on.
I think that's true. I think that's true. And I think that's even true going to the shows that I went to. And I didn't fully appreciate how great Frank Zappa was. But I realized it well enough. I realized that the shows were really good. I really love the music, and these guys could really play it the hell out of it. So I think it would be different if I was able to go back now and go, oh, wow, it was even, you know, even better. But I do have, you know, there's a lot of DVDs and videotape and stuff of him live. So I certainly can look at those and, you know, oh, yeah, they're, you know, I was around during that time. I remember those shows. I didn't see that particular show, but I was, you know, it was that tour. Yeah, so that would be great if I could go back and, you know, see the early Mothers of Invention. That'd be awesome.
And you said you saw Tom Waits, or you actually got Tom Waits' autograph. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
I did. He was not that he really was not that popular when I saw him. He was kind of, people knew him, you know, a little group of people, cult group. But he did two shows at the Park West in the same night. And the album Foreign Affair had just come out. And I had heard one of the songs on WXRT. It was really late. I was with my brother. We were driving around, and we had XRT on. And they played the song from the album Foreign Affair called, I don't think, Barbershop or Mr. Snip Snip Snip, you know. Good morning, Mr. Snip Snip Snip. Got your haircut just as short as mine. You know, so anyway, we were like, who is that? You know, and we really thought it was great. And I especially was, you know, just thought it was awesome. And I went out and I bought the album. And I loved the whole album. And I bought some more albums. And then he came to the Park West. He did two shows at the Park West. And I went to both shows. I got tickets to both shows. And after the two shows, and he was great. You know, both shows were great. And I go, this is a great place to have Tom Waits. Park West is a great place to have. I would go head to head with Arnie Granite, who is a jam, promotion guy. We would bump heads occasionally over bands and get into bidding wars, but. And I think usually the bands, I mean, these were like punk and kind of new wave bands. And I'm like, I don't know why he's fighting for this particular band, because I'm going to do way more with him at the venue that I have in mind than he's going to have at the Park West. But Tom Waits is a really good, I mean, he's a perfect person to play the Park West. And both shows were sold out. And then after the shows, I was outside and he came out. Yeah, I was waiting for him. I thought, well, there's only one way out of the Park West. Gonna have to come out the front door. And it was, you know, it took a while. Everybody had left. And I was ready. I had my piece of paper and my pen. You know, I wasn't slick. But, you know, and he signed it, and I still have it. And I talked to him a little bit. I just said, oh, you know, what a great writer he is, and how much I like the music and the albums I have, and geeked out a little bit, you know, talked about, you know, again, this is something that I do with my music friends, but I don't really do it otherwise. And that's, you know, you talk about limited edition things and labels, you know, this has got the rare blue label and not the purple label, and, you know, and nobody else gets it. Everybody else thinks you're crazy, that you're a ridiculous person, except for music people who are, you know, really into that stuff, and they take it very seriously, and I take it very seriously. You know, I'm glad there are people I can hang out with that aren't going to laugh at me, you know, right. That are just as serious about it, and they love their record collections, and, you know, they are looking for... There's not really that many things that I'm looking for. I'm hoping to get that Zappa Erie limited edition. I assume that I will, that it will arrive in one piece, but I don't have it yet. I haven't received it yet. So, you know.
So you have all the records, you have all the shirts, pretty much have everything, it sounds like.
Signatures I do. And all that stuff, huh? That's just like amazing.
Yeah. The only thing that I've never seen it, and I guess it's probably somewhere. I have people on the lookout for me, but there is a version of the Mothers of Invention Uncle Meat double album that has a booklet in it that is completely different than the booklet that everybody else has, the booklet that everybody else has or have seen. This is one booklet that, you know, came with the Uncle Meat album. And I've only seen that one. But online, I have seen the pictures of this totally different booklet that was with some copies of the Uncle Meat album. And some of the song titles on the back changed also. I've never seen a copy of that Uncle Meat with the booklet, totally different pictures. But I have people on the case. They're like, yeah, you know, we'll let you know.
Music sleuths. Music memorabilia sleuths.
Exactly. You know, I mean, there are people who are really, you know, pretty well connected. Vintage Vinyl is a good example. Mm-hmm. You know, he is really good at, he knows exactly who to talk to, who might have stuff, where to get it, and, you know, what's rare and what's unusual. And, you know, and it's why he's been in business for all these years. I mean, he, you know, he, that store was open when I was doing shows. You know, I mean, it's been open since I was, you know, I mean, I started shows when I was a teenager, when I was in high school, started shows. And that's, so they've been open a long time. I think if anybody is going to, probably if anyone's going to eventually find it, it'll be him. Somebody said, who do you think is the person that's going to be able to find this? I think it's going to be him. You know, I mean, you never know. There are some other people who have come through on occasion, so it could happen again. But he consistently pretty much gets very unusual stuff. So yeah, that is a possibility. I think that's about it, though. I mean, as far as, you know, things that I'm kind of looking for that I haven't found.
Are there any, are there any live music recordings of Mother's Invention that you're, you know, that you think are like sought after, or things, you know, relics from shows that Mother's Invention, you know, have done that you're like, man, I gotta have that in my collection, you know? Or like, do you have a guitar pick or anything like that? Like, but are there like sought after, you know, relics?
Drumsticks.
Drumsticks, anything like that from Mother Invention shows that you're like, I gotta have that in my collection?
Yeah. You know,
or
I don't, you know, I've never seen any. I've never, you know, and I obviously from a lot of other bands, I have lots of guitar picks. I have lots of, you know, drumsticks. I have lots of set lists. Lots of set lists. You know, just all kinds of stuff. But, you know, those shows don't know of any, you know, anything like, oh, I got to have. Now, here is kind of an example.
This is Iggy Pop here. This is my band.
You know, when Iggy Pop was getting the Stooges back together, I know the whole story, but I don't think I'm going to tell the whole story, but. Or I'll tell part of it, but not all of it. And I think the audience, if anybody, you know, the people that listen to this will be able to put two together. So, if you look at the back of the Raw Power album, Iggy's wearing a leather jacket with kind of a leopard thing on it, and it's like a tiger on the back, or it looks like a tiger. Anyway, and he's kind of looking over his shoulder. It's a very cool jacket. When I did a tour with the Dickies, and one of the members of the Dickies had the original Raw Power jacket that he got from Iggy Pop. And he had it because they made a trade. And I think Iggy thought that he would eventually get that his Raw Power jacket back. And of course everybody on the tour, I mean, we all put on the jacket. We're like, you know, we're gonna put it on, we're putting on the jacket, and everybody put on the jacket, and only John Holland was smart enough to get a picture of him looking behind his shoulder with a jacket. And it's kind of funny to see that picture now, because, you know, it's like that was like the early 80s. So the picture that was taken, you know, it's not like the kind of pictures you get now. I mean, it's a little blurry. I mean, but you can see what it is. You can see John Holland wearing the Iggy Pop Raw Power jacket and looking over his shoulder like the back of the Raw Power album. So anyway, eventually that member of the Dickies sold that Raw Power jacket, the original Raw Power jacket, to a collector in California. That's gone. And so Iggy got the Stooges back, and he had the makers of the original jacket make him a new one. They still had the design and, you know, the whole thing. So they were able to, they were going to make him, you know, a new Raw Power jacket. And I think it was Iggy's manager who called me, told me about it, and said, you know, if you want one, they're going to be selling more than, you know, they're going to make more than one. They're going to make maybe a handful. It's not worth it for them just to do one. So they'll do a handful and they'll sell the handful. And do you want one? I'm like, yeah, I want one. Definitely want one. And took a while, and you know, they weren't sure if they were going to be able to do it in my size, but eventually they said, okay, we can do it in your size, and it's going to cost, and it was not cheap either, I might add. You know, but I have it. They made it, and I have it. I've worn it, and it's
so
very
cool. So where's the original? Do you know where it is in California?
Yeah, who bought that original one? Do you know? Track that down.
Yeah, I mean, they told me the name of the collector, and to be honest, I can't remember his name, but I guess he's like a big collector in California.
Oh.
And so they told me his name.
So maybe
name,
we
and
need
like,
to have him on the show. We'll have to go to his house, knock
raw,
on his door.
The Raw Power follow-up show.
Yeah.
See what else he
has.
Well,
he's got it.
Tracing down the jacket.
I don't know. And I my understanding is that he collects all kinds of things. So it's not just necessarily like music oriented things, but it's just all kinds of stuff. So, you know, yeah, it would be interesting to see this guy and I guess see all the stuff that he has. But yeah, he's a collector and he's got the jacket. He's got the original Raw Power jacket, which is pretty neat. But I'm
so
happy
that was
with.
So that was traded between the band members. Is this what you meant by putting two and two together, what they traded it for? Is that what you...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah.
Leave it up to the imagination.
We'll have
on
to
that
imagine
one.
It. Yeah. Imagination that. Wow. Yeah. What a...
So, I mean, I'm like, wow, I can't believe... Yeah. It's like, I can't believe that he would have, you know... But he did, you know, and now his collector has it. And it's very cool, you know. And there are pictures of me online wearing that jacket, you know. And I think, oh, this looks great, you know. And you had to be there at the right time, talking to those guys. And you know, it's a company in London too that made it. And I was here, so I was like, you know, emailing back and forth, and you know. Then I had to pay duties on it when it showed up. Or whatever. There's a lot of weird stuff connected to it. But I got it. I have it. And wow. They did a very nice, you know, job with the box that it came in. I kept all that stuff. The box that came in, there was a picture, like a glossy picture of, you know, Iggy wearing it from the, you know, from the Raw Power, you know, concert that he did in London. And
so what else do you have in your closets? Any other really, really cool things you'd like to share? Another one?
You know, I mean, it's stuff that I think is cool, but I don't know. It depends, I guess, on who you are. I've always said that, unless it's somebody really famous. Oh, I'm sure that some people would be very excited. Well, yeah, there are probably some people would be very excited. You know, I spent a lot of time with Lady Gaga. She said when she would come to Chicago, I would see her every time she came to Chicago. And I have a lot of autographed stuff from her when she was starting out, including like the Just Dance when that first came out. You know, it was on CD. It was just a dance, Just Dance with a bunch of versions and an EP. And there's some posters that she signed that I have. And then I was backstage with her at the Monster Ball. And there was a booklet, a Monster Ball booklet that she signed and gave to me, which I have. And I gave her a copy of that movie that I'm in, the You Weren't There movie. It was on in a DVD, a DVD copy, which, you know, I'm a shameless self-promoter, as you know. I mean, if I think I can get, like, just any kind of low-radar attention, I will do it, you know. So, you know, I was more than, you know, having to hold up that DVD next to Lady Gaga and, you know, have a picture taken of us, me holding up the DVD. And then, you know, there's a picture of it on the desk, and I gave it to her. And I, to be honest, I assume that she watched it, but I've not talked, I have not spoken to her about, you know, if she has or not, but I assume that she has. I mean, she was starting to get, when I, at the Monster Bowl, she was not as big as she is now, but she was starting to really, you know, get bigger. And I knew her before that. I knew her when she would, like, she'd come to Chicago, she'd play, you know, three or four songs in a club, like Manor. She was at Manor. A lot of these places are gone. I mean, it's weird. They pop up and they appear. But she was at Manor, and then there was like three or four different like nightclubs that she would chat at 2 or 3 in the morning, and she would do a, you know, like 4 songs or something. That would be it. And I would talk to her, and then I saw her. We were at a record store together, and then there was a Pride thing that she was at, some club there. They were doing, I remember I saw her there, and then she was at, yeah, she did the House of Blues, and I saw her there. And she used to mention me from the stage. Like, oh, Eric's here. You know, it's great to see Eric, which I love, you know. Where was the, was it the, oh, and then the last time I think was at the United Center. That's, you know, obviously pretty, you know, very big. Oh, and no, after that I saw her again. She was at like Lollapalooza, and that was like, she was like the headliner. So that, you know, that's always like, you know, it's a little tiny person, and then like, you know, an entire field of people all over, you know. And it's funny too, because when they, when she first played Lollapalooza, nobody knew who she was at all. And you know, they were not paying her. The Vincent Herbert, I think he paid like $60,000 for her to play the BMI stage at Lollapalooza. And, you know, I saw her there, and this, she, nobody knew who she was. They had absolutely no idea. That was actually a very fun show. Very, you know, early Lady Gaga show. I don't know. We talked about that, I think, the last time. So yeah. I guess I don't want to repeat it. But, you know, for anybody who cares, the first podcast I did.
It's a great story. Yeah, go back. Is episode 23, I believe. And that is,
yeah, yeah, I mean, if you'd like
to. You tell a great story of... on that one, so it's cool to have you go back and kind of tell different stories of Lady Gaga. But that's, yeah, I think you got trapped underneath the crowd, right?
Oh yeah,
that was
when Semi Precious Weapons played. Lady Gaga was actually very famous then, but she was friends with them. She used to open up for Semi Precious Weapons in New York, and she was the Stephanie Germanotta band back then. And then, you know, she kind of returned the favor, and Semi Precious Weapons opened up for her, but they were doing it, you know, at these huge places. And, you know, it's kind of sad. I mean, Semi Precious Weapons just really never, it didn't just not take off. And they were great. They were just a great, great band. And I don't, you know, I think that it was, you know, they knew Lady Gaga, but it was the wrong pairing. You know, I mean, they were kind of this kind of New York dowsy garage rock band type thing, trash band. You know, and she was doing her pop thing, and you know, I think it was just, you know, I understand why that happened the way it happened is because they knew a big star and they could be in front of people, but. You know, part of me was like, yeah, you know, I like it, but I don't know if this is going to work. Because, you know, if you're going to go to a metal show and you have a polka band open up, probably not going to go over that well. You're probably not going to get a lot of new fans. So,
people showing up late.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's, you know, it's hard to be an opener anyway. Anybody will tell you, you know, it's very difficult to be an opener. Mm-hmm. Now, some people are like, oh, they're so lucky they get to open up for, you know, whoever. You know, mostly it's like everybody wants to see the headliner. That's the band that they know. Usually they don't want to sit through the opener. And occasionally there'll be an opener like where people are like, oh, I like these people too. It doesn't happen that often, to be honest. I do remember seeing like the Ramones opening up for Iggy Pop when the Ramones' first album came out. I think that was a pretty good pairing. I think a lot of people who like Iggy Pop like the Ramones. But, you know, usually you'd have the bills would be very weird. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if anybody's – I don't know if this is working or not.
I remember hearing stories of I believe it was Jimi Hendrix, an experience opened up for the Monkees. I think that was
– yeah, I mean, stuff like that. Right? You're like, okay,
like,
well –
something like that, and they were just getting booed, or they were like, what is this? And, you know, they're like, where's the Monkees? You know, I think I remember reading about that one. It's kind
of yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people
now
would,
right?
Like, you know, those people who were doing that were probably will never mention that they like, yeah, I wanted, I was booing Jimi Hendrix on him off the stage. I wanted to see the Monkees, you know.
Give me the Monkees, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, you know, if you're an opener, it's very hard to get people to listen to you and to give you a chance. And, you know, they really just want to hear the band they're familiar with. Which is too bad. I mean, a lot of the, well, I would say a lot of the smaller clubs, you can, you know, just hear absolute genius. Can happen. And that's the place where it's going to happen for the most part. I mean, I think I mentioned, you know, I saw this show with Chairlift, who I just adore. I mean, Caroline Polachek has got her solo career now. So, you know, she's doing pretty well. But, you know, I would see her every time she came to town. I would see her, and, you know, they would, I would understand it. They would play like, Chubas, and those shows were great. You know? And I remember seeing her at Chubas with Mikachu and the Shapes, opening for them. And John Moss, like opened the whole thing. And that was just like the greatest night. Because John Moss was like a really good person to open to get things started. And then Mikachu and the Shapes, I'm like, who are these people? You know, what, you know, and I've loved them since then. I'm like, this band is great. You know, they're so out there. It's so original. The stuff was just absolutely amazing. You know, and you know, they changed their name. It's like Bad, Happy, Sad, Mad, or something like that now, but, you know, it's still them. And they only have, I think they have maybe, you know, like 4 records. But you listen to their stuff, it's really interesting, it's really different. Mika Levy, you know, makes a lot of her own instruments. She, like, creates instruments stuff you've never heard before. And their show was just, you know, just great. They're not, you know, they were here then, and then they played the Aragon, and we actually, you know, we followed them to Las Vegas. We hung out with them in Las Vegas because they were playing the House of Blues in Las Vegas. And so, you know, we hung out with Mikachu and the Shapes in Vegas at the House of Blues. Yeah. There's pictures. I have a lot of pictures. They're online of us with them in Vegas. I don't know. Vegas is, you know, they're from England. So I think they were like, look at this place. It's, you know, this is nuts. You know?
Right.
I think this they really great, liked yeah. it. They, you know, it's like walking into wacky land, you know. And, you know, you're
adult
on the strip
playland.
And it's just, yeah, you know, it's like everything is nuts. But, you know, if you're from here, and I was like, yeah, Vegas, you know, whatever, you know. But
That's
it was
awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun seeing them. It was really great hearing them and spending time with them because they're just not here very often, and they hardly ever put anything out, and they hardly ever tour. There's just, you know, it's one of those things where you're just the most awesome thing in the world, and the fan base is tiny, and hardly anybody's ever heard of you. And, you know, and the music business is not going to get behind a band like that. They're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Hmm. You know, which is too bad. And I don't know why that is. I mean, I really don't, I don't believe that there isn't a market for a Mikachu and the Shapes, but I believe that the people that are in control believe there's no market for a Mikachu. As long as they think that way, it's not going to happen. And then there's also the band, they're called Are Missing, but they were the Ropes. Same band, you know, it's a different name. And I feel the same way. Great stuff. Just, you know, awesome recordings, really just a really cool band. Very, you know, thoughtful. They have a lot of things to say. They have a point of view. And their releases have been, I think, just terrific. And, you know, there's no real promotion. And they have a, you know, small cult group of listeners. And, you know, maybe one day, you never know, that a lot of people discover this stuff. It'll show up in a movie or something, and all of a sudden people know who they are, or more people know who they are. But, you know, it's too bad. You know, a lot of this stuff gets lost. And now there's just so much. There's just so much stuff. And as you would suspect, you know, I mean, 80, 90% of it is really not good. You know, it's bad, you know. But the stuff that is good is really good. You know, so I guess, you know, you have to have a lot of people that are trying to do things to get that, you know, that percentage of really great stuff, but finding it is not easy because there's just so much, and, you listen to as much stuff as you can, but there's just too much. You can't listen to it all. You just can't. And so you just have to sort of stumble on things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it's definitely there is a lot. There's a lot out there, and yeah, I mean it's great, Eric, to be able to, man, I can't say enough, being able to connect back up with you and telling some stories, you know, new stories about Zappa and fantastic. So thank you so much for joining us, sharing our stories. Again, we'll have to have you back on.
I gotta see this closet.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it's a lot of it's awesome. Eric, it's so great here having you back on the show. Thank you so much sharing the stories about Zappa and some more more great Gaga stories, and of course the Iggy Pop and the jacket. We'll have to Raw Power jacket. We'll have to search that one out. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you back on the show.
It's been great. Thank you. And I'm sure we'll talk again in the near future.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
What a blast it was catching up with Eric. You know, in case you're wondering, yes, Eric has finally received the Frank Zappa Eerie box set, and he has confirmed that there is a lot of really cool and rare Zappa live music items in that box set, which I'm sure Eric is thoroughly enjoying as we speak. It was just so cool, man, to be able to talk about just topics we hadn't really explored yet. You know, what is the afterlife like when it comes to concerts? You know, can you see your favorite bands live in the afterlife? Man, what a thought, right? You know, and the other thing that Eric brought up that's got me thinking is, do we fully appreciate bands live when we see them at such a young age? You know, do we need to go back and see those same shows? And what would that be like? And, you know, what would we see differently? Just a fantastic time to talk with them. Great that he's doing well with the Zappa memorabilia. You know, if you need more info on all the stuff that we covered during the show, and we covered lots of different kinds of topics, so make sure you check out the show notes on livefixpodcast.com, and we will catch you on the next episode. Live Fix Podcast is a production of Live Fix Media and is produced by Chris and Colleen Catania. Hey, we know every concert fan has a live music story to share, and we'd love to share yours in a future episode. So head on over to livefixpodcast.com and click on Share Your Story. We look forward to hearing from you. Like what you heard? Did you get inspired by the stories of your fellow concert fans? Then help support Life Fix Podcast by subscribing and sharing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. We appreciate your support, and thanks for listening.